time once again for Community Forum, and we're very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Naomi Wolf. Naomi Wolf is a feminist, a social critic, and author. She is co-founder and president of the Woodhull Institute for Ethical Leadership and co-founder of the American Freedom Campaign. Her essays have appeared in numerous publications, including The New Republic, The Wall Street Journal, Glamour, Ms., Esquire, The Washington Post, and The New York Times. She is the author of numerous books, including the international bestseller, The Beauty Myth, Fire with Fire, The New Female Power and How It Will Change the 21st Century, Promiscuities, The Secret Struggle for Womanhood, The End of America, A Letter of Warning to a Young Patriot, and she is here to talk about her new book, Give Me Liberty, A Handbook for American Revolutionaries. Naomi, thank you again for coming on the show.
Mike, thank you so much for giving me a chance.
Start out and tell us, what was the motivation in writing your new book, Give Me Liberty?
Well, thank you. I should correct, by the way, I'm not the president of the Woodhull Institute.
Oh.
That's okay, your bio probably has it wrong. The wonderful Margo McGowan in San Francisco is the president. But I wrote Give Me Liberty as a sequel to The End of America because when I was traveling around the country warning people of these 10 steps to fascism, these 10 steps to a closed society that I saw always are put in place when a would-be leader, a would-be dictator wants to crush a democracy or close an open society, many people rightly saw that what I was saying was true. They saw the signs all around them. Everything from step one, hyping an internal and external threat that's terrifying. Step two, creating a secret prison system outside the rule of law, where torture takes place. Step three, creating a paramilitary force not answerable to the people. Step four, a surveillance apparatus, and so on. And they freaked out, understandably, as they should. And they said, what do we do? So I wrote a sequel, which is, what do we do? It's like, you know, first we get terrified and then we get down to work. And that's Give Me Liberty. And, I looked at times and places where citizens were faced with the closing of an open society and successfully fought back. Cause that's, we're in an emergency, we're in a crisis, and I want to get to that, today quickly. The second thing I did is I looked back at the founders, and I don't just mean the well-known white men property holders. I mean the whole founding generation, ordinary people, many of them not named by history, farmers and artisans and washerwomen and enslaved African Americans, all of whom had this vision of liberty and moved it forward and put their lives on the line to make it real. And I wanted to go back to what are the core principles that America is supposed to give us, because we're being manipulated and brainwashed so far away from that with fake democracy, fake patriotism. And the last part of the book is a practical how-to. We need a battle plan. A coup has taken place, and people need to know how to fight back. I mean, the worst thing to happen when there's a coup is confusion. And that's what you see, like in Pakistan. I was in touch with the democracy activists, and they were just like lefties here, you know, or just like activists here. They were kind of running around and infighting and frantic and bad communications. And, you know, and yet they were able to push back when they finally organized and realized what had happened. So Americans are facing a coup as of this morning, as of October 1st and confirmed this morning. It's happened. And we have almost no time to push back, and we have to understand that it's an emergency. So in the last third of the book, it's a practical how-to, everything from become your own media, write the op-eds, frame the debate, to start your own political movement, organize as democracy commando units to put pressure on your representatives. But now that the coup is here rather than looming, I'm adding pieces to the battle plan. We've got a movement that you can join at myamericaproject.org. You can screen a film to terrify people and alert them to the threat if they don't read books at endofamericamovie.com. But most urgently, the most crucial step is to understand the nature of the threat and to act accordingly. So on Monday, I'm going to be posting ramped up how-tos, more urgent how-tos, among them how to arrest the president because a coup has taken place.
All right, so last we talked, things were getting bad, and we have seen things getting worse since then. Can you kind of summarize the things that you find most disturbing?
I sure can. And I'm very sorry to have to be the messenger for this, but I'm grateful to have your voice and your podium, because the last time we talked about it, it reached nearly 100,000 people. And so people have to listen to this, take it seriously, don't trust me, don't trust you, Mike, back it up, look at the research, and then tell everybody you know, we need action, we need millions of people rising up. First, why should you trust me when I tell you how scared I am? Last fall, you and I talked, Mike, and I said, within 6 months, according to the blueprint, which is always predictive, you're going to start to see terrorists being charged with the definition of terrorism expand so that you're going to see headlines where people who look like ordinary Americans are going to be charged as terrorists. I just met Ian Bicking, the brother of Monica Bicking, a middle-class white guy from the Midwest, clean, well-scrubbed, just your average American Joe, terrified because his sister, for protesting, has been named as a terrorist and is facing $250,000 in legal fees and possibly many years in prison. I said last fall that you're going to start seeing mass arrests within 6 months. Those mass arrests occurred. They were sweeps of immigrants. They were terrifying. They were processed behind closed doors, behind blacked out windows. I think that they were practice. I said you're going to start seeing journalists being arrested. Dozens of journalists were arrested at the RNC, including Amy Goodman, Jane Hampshire, Fire Dog Lake. And we haven't seen a lot of video footage of the RNC because I was chilled to discover that police exposed the film of protesters or ruined the recording apparatuses of protesters. And so we've posted some chilling footage on the website for our organization where you can see the abuse of citizens, but the person who got us that footage had to bury it until after he was released from his arrest so he could retrieve it. This is what happens in the Soviet Union. This is what happens in a closed society. And then I said, you're going to start to see it, it being made easier for the president to declare martial law, to declare a state of emergency. And I said, and I've been saying for months, leading up to the election, you're going to start to see instability, hyped threats, hyped emergencies, hyped crises in order to create an atmosphere of urgency to justify a crackdown. And I'm sorry to tell you, every single one of those things has come true. And so I'm very sorry to tell you, but I feel like I feel like this is my one chance to alert America. This morning, I was told about this last night, and I couldn't believe it, the way you can't believe these things in America, but then check it out. Go to C-SPAN, go to YouTube, type in Representative Brad Sherman and martial law. There is a clip on C-SPAN, which explains a lot, if it's true. But he's a Democratic representative from the 27th District, Sherman Oaks, Northridge, California. I have no reason to believe he's insane. And he is saying in private conversation, he's saying that the administration has hyped an atmosphere of crisis around the bailout. And I believe it because looking at the language Bush is using, it's not to stabilize markets. It's this is an emergency. Be afraid. It's coming to you. It's going to get worse and worse. This is not FDR language. This is the way you whip up agitated markets. It's not the way you calm them. And, Sarah Palin, 20 times, we're in crisis mode. We're in crisis mode. We're in crisis mode. And he said, Representative Sherman said, that in private conversations, and he didn't name a subject, which makes sense. It was very brave of him to do this. He said, in private conversations, members have been told that if they didn't pass the bailout bill, the market was going to go down 1,000 points every day. And by Monday, he said, they would be facing martial law. They were threatened with martial law. He said several members in private conversations were threatened with martial law if they didn't do as he said. Now, why should we take this seriously? This is my other terrible piece of news, but we have to wake up. We have to wake up. On October 1st, the 1st Brigade of the 3rd Infantry Division was deployed in the United States of America for the first time since 1807, when a bright line was placed preventing military from policing American streets. A military brigade that's 3,000 to 4,000 soldiers has been brought in to police our streets. Army Times reported it. Don't take my word for it. Now, why is this terrifying? Three things. What is the definition of a police state? A police state is when the leader has his own army on the street and his own treasury. Bear with me. The bailout bill had fine print that gave the president alone $100 billion in discretionary spending with no oversight. Who knows what the final bill looks like? We haven't seen the fine print, but I'm willing to bet you that there's you know, an intervention by the president that gives him more power than he had before in the national economy. You see this always in a police state. The leader intervenes into the national economy and creates a chunk of it that doesn't have adequate oversight or that empowers him further. The second thing you always see, the definition of a police state, is troops on the ground in civilian contexts. Now, why am I terrified by these troops? Why should I not be reassured that, oh, these are our guys and it's America? Here's why. If you look at the history of closing societies, what starts to happen, this happened in Italy in 1920, it happened in Germany in 1933. What starts to happen is it'll still be a democracy, but the president or the leader or the Führer will start to find a way to deploy military forces at his discretion. Now, these soldiers are not answerable to the Congress of the United States. They are answerable to the President of the United States. He is the commander-in-chief. That is the chain of command. That is the chain of command. So he can send these troops to your home. He can send these troops to outside voting booths. He can send them to protests. He can send them inside the halls of Congress, which is what both Mussolini and Hitler did when it was still a democracy, to intimidate legislators, as clearly they're starting to intimidate legislators. Bear with me. These troops, their mission, according to the Army Times, is crowd control, subduing unruly individuals, and responding in a potential emergency. And I talked to the brother last night here in Seattle of a soldier who is engaged in training exercises with the 1st Brigade. So why is it so terrifying that their mission is crowd control? They're going to use the same technologies of crowd control they used in Iraq, according to Army Times. That includes tasers and rubber bullets. Tasers have killed 300 citizens already, and rubber bullets are so lethal against citizens that the United Kingdom has withheld their use because they killed so many people in Ireland. Now, subduing unruly individuals, that means legally that they can define it however they want. If you are arguing about being purged from the voter rolls, you are an unruly individual. If you are protesting, you know, another stolen election, you're an unruly individual. But even more terrifying than that, you know, these are our kids. They are. But first of all, do not be deluded that if someone is of the same nationality as the citizens and they're a soldier, they will not follow orders. The Zimbardo experiments and history show that soldiers follow orders. These same kids, these decent young men and women, have been sent to Iraq and they have followed orders that have given them nightmares and post-traumatic stress syndrome. As a matter of policy, they've been charged with torturing. As a matter of policy, they've been charged with intimidating civilians. As a matter of policy, the U.S. military takes hostage wives and husbands of suspected insurgents and holds them, essentially kidnaps them, to pressure people to turn themselves in. As a matter of policy, the U.S. military has followed orders to lock up journalists. There are 8 journalists in U.S. custody in Iraq. Now I'm going to close the circle and I'm going to scare you to death because I'm scared to death. And you can say, well, it's America. It's America. We have civilian law. The president and his lawyers have successfully established a legal claim for the war on terror, that the whole world is a battlefield. And so the whole world, you can call someone an enemy combatant and detain them, disappear them, even torture them. If the whole world is a battlefield and there are troops on the ground in America, how is America not a battlefield? Legally. And if the whole world is a battlefield and there are troops on the ground in America, how does military law not supersede civilian law? And closing the circle finally, when Brad Sherman says we've been threatened with martial law, before the 1st Brigade was deployed, that would have been an empty threat because National Guard responds to the governors and we managed to stop Blackwater by you know, enough people screaming and yelling to keep them from being deployed as the president's army. The president now has an army. The president now has an army. What is the purpose of having 3,000 to 4,000 soldiers who will do your bidding or else face serious repercussions to make good, among other things, to make it serious to be able to threaten our Congress with martial law if they don't do as he says? And what I want to tell you is if Congress thinks, if this is true, and if Congress thinks they can stop a threat of martial law by caving, you know, they have got to look at history, because the pattern is once you yield, this is exactly like Mussolini. Mussolini did exactly this in 1920 with Parliament. Once you yield to the first threat, instead of arresting the leader who has staged a coup, you see more and more and more serious incursions.
Yeah, there was a lot of parallels between the bailout bill that was just passed and the Patriot Act. I mean, that sense of fear, we have to do something very quickly. The change from the original bailout bill being 4 pages to now close to 500 pages, where you know our elected representatives did
can't
not read,
read it.
That.
That's exactly right. I mean, the Patriot Act was rushed through with the same, as you say, sense of urgency. They were told they weren't patriotic if they didn't pass it. I've held the Patriot Act. It weighs as much as a newborn baby. It's like 7 pounds. And they were given like 6 hours in the middle of the night to read it and pass it. I think we're going to find with this bill, as I say, if it follows the historical pattern, that the president, especially with his personal army now, is in a position that he will be very difficult to be told no to. And that is the definition of a coup.
It's also interesting that the Army under Rumsfeld had changed its oath recently. So it has a completely new oath that...
The Warrior's Creed, right? Is that what you're talking about?
I believe so. And
to the Commander-in-Chief rather than the Constitution.
And to the mission. Completing the mission is like the top priority.
Oh, rather than serving the Constitution?
Yeah. Well, it's the first thing mentioned.
Yeah.
So...
Wait, but can we just not stop there? I mean, we have to get out of the habits of thinking in a democracy. We have to understand that we're thinking in a police state. October 1st, the coup took place. October 1st, 2008, the coup in America took place. So we have a small window to act, but we have to realize we have to speed up our reflexes because we're in police state time. We're in coup time. I mean, we have to think like Pakistanis, and we're in an emergency. And one of the things you have to do, the only safe thing, is to arrest the people who have staged a coup. Now, Congress isn't going to do it. They're intimidated, and they don't have the powers. The Army can't do it unless they go outside the chain of command, although I'm very disturbed that I was also told last night that there's an active discussion on military Internet discussion boards about whether or not to obey continuity of government orders. I was told this last night. I haven't checked it out for myself, but it's another distressing signal. We have got to get these people arrested and investigated. We've got to seize their computers. We've got to keep them from being able to continue what is clearly an armed insurrection. I mean, this is the definition of treason. An insurrection has taken place. It happens to be the commander-in-chief who's done it, but an armed insurrection has taken place. We don't have much time. So what Vincent Bugliosi has very brilliantly pointed out in his book, The Trial for Murder of George W. Bush, is that it is legal, although now that military law suspends United States law, you know, this is the reason to act before we start getting into these kinds of conflicts, where, believe me, civilian law doesn't win. But as of right now, we're in a position to press our district attorneys, who do have the authority, according to Bugliosi, to arrest the president. And there's one brave would-be district attorney who's promising to do that if she's elected. We don't have time for that. We have to press our DAs to arrest him now.
So no promising DAs existing that will stand up to this?
We're just sending out the call right now. I mean, hello, this is news headlines. It's happening in real time. So I'm asking your listeners to forward this video virally and to get these people arrested because they have staged a coup.
Are you talking about the Brad Sherman video?
No, forward this video that we're creating right now.
Oh, gotcha.
Certainly forward the Brad Sherman video as well.
Well, and you had mentioned previously about some other videos. Which of the websites are those at? I know your endofamericamovie.com has some. Is there also some at myamericaproject.org?
I don't believe they've posted the RNC footage there yet, but that's where you can download very soon a user's guide to the Bill of Rights and a user's guide to the Constitution. Because my argument in Give Me Liberty is that we've been propagandized to forget our rights as citizens in order to, over the last 30 years, not just the last 8, in order to make us pliable for this kind of power grab.
So in addition to contacting DAs, what else do you propose? We've got about 9 minutes left.
Okay, it's very important. You have to reject Homeland Security money. You have to call on your representatives to your city council to reject Homeland Security money. Millions of dollars are being pumped into local communities, police departments. and Homeland Security agents are training them to essentially make war against citizens. And Homeland Security money is actually being funneled in advance to pay off lawsuits that citizens are going to bring after their abuse by police officers and Homeland Security agents. So it's basically ransom money to buy off the rights of American citizens. You have to reject it. And by the way, a police report came out saying it's not helpful, that, you know, crime is escalating in local communities. They don't have money to fight it. Well, expensive Homeland Security, biohazard suits are sitting gathering dust. Most urgently, you know, one of the things I call for is to set up a fund to pay the legal expenses of soldiers who are persuaded to lay down their arms and not take up arms against the United States of America. Unfortunately, it is now legal for the president to direct them to make war against American citizens because of the 2007 Defense Authorization Act. So even though soldiers are not prosecuted if they disobey illegal orders, unfortunately this order is legal, so they can be prosecuted for refusing to serve in the U.S., in the United States of America. So I want to start a fund to support their families. I want people to reach out to military families to say there is a higher patriotism. There is a higher patriotism. I think, you know, again, most urgently, to arrest the criminals. I mean, that is the most urgent thing, to recognize that it's a state of emergency. It's not business as usual. There is not going to be an election as usual. If he can declare on October 3rd that he's going to engage in martial law, if people don't do what he wants, why on earth would he hand over the power to a Barack Obama presidency and election? This is crazy thinking. This is denial, and we have to snap out of it.
Talk about the parallels to the situation now and the founding of this country, how regular people fought.
Thank you, Mike. That's a very important and inspiring thing to direct our attention to. And again, that was the source of my sense of courage when I read about these people in Give Me Liberty. It's exactly what I wanted to offer people at a time of crisis like this. The founding generation, you know, totally ordinary Americans, were facing the biggest military power on earth at the time, George III's government, and his mercenaries who were doing what the 1st Brigade is sent to do. They were policing civilian streets. They were bursting into people's homes without warrants. That's why we have the Fourth Amendment, or had the Fourth Amendment. They were terrifying women, molesting women. They were intimidating children, going through people's, you know, private possessions. The founding generation knew how terrifying a standing army was. Nonetheless, ordinary people rose up again and again. You know, the Boston Tea Party was really an act of guerrilla radical theater. Very brave people, but that's just one example. Ordinary Americans were so enraged by this assault on their liberties that they would go to the tax collectors, George III's tax collectors' homes, and dismantle these mansions brick by brick and leave not a brick standing. In New York, where Battery Park now is, they would, and I'm not saying do this, it's just a sign of how brave and fierce they were in defense of liberty, they would set fire to these palatial carriages, you know, that these tax collectors had. They would build these bonfires. When Washington, issued an edict, a foreign policy edict with Britain that they didn't agree with, there were riots up and down the eastern seaboard. What I'm trying to say is the first contract in the Declaration of Independence, the first contract that these citizens took into their hearts is, you are committed as an American to standing up against tyranny and oppression. More peaceably, giving you an example, I didn't know this, African Americans who were enslaved risked their lives to bring many, many lawsuits against the legislatures in colonial America for their freedom, because ordinary people understood that these rights are universal rights, and that when a tyrant looms, when a structure of tyranny looms, you have to do everything to oppress it, to oppose it, I beg your pardon. So I go back to the core principles that they wanted us to remember. Your first principle, you're not entitled to speak freely. You're obliged to speak freely. People are feeling fearful. They're silencing themselves. You have to, as an American, speak freely. Second principle, you have to